Mo, come here, buddy. You're going to be in the movies.
And the person interviewing me wrote those words down, looked up from his piece of paper and said to me, "So do you think we're going to like that?"
Yeah, I do what I do today, Kathy, because of a fourth grade field trip.
No credit to me, just me fumbling along with what I knew at the time and the dog being very forgiving of my mistakes.
History. It's a funny thing. You know, you hear, if we don't pay attention to the past, we're bound to repeat it. Then you also hear things like, you can look at your past, just don't stare at it. That we should be looking to the future, that we should be releasing ourselves from the past, letting go of the past. As you might guess, I kind of think the answer falls somewhere in between. I mean, after all, when I'm driving a car, I look through the windshield when I'm driving, but it's a good idea to keep your eye on your rearview mirrors just to see what's on the sides and behind you. Glance at it. Don't stare. It's also, I don't know, I think it's important to look at the past because I can learn from the patterns of my past. I can learn from my mistakes, at least if I pay attention to them. Here's the problem. History, it's written through the eyes of the people who win. People who win wars, people who win elections, people who win the economic lottery. They rewrite history. So what's the truth? I'm living right now in an interesting part of the country, as I've mentioned, Central Virginia. Lots of history. And lots of places where the past is actually present in a really, really powerful way. So this week on the podcast, I explore ideas that got sparked by a roadside sign, a sign that caught my attention and reminded me that sometimes the answer is right in front of you. I'm Kathy Brooks, and this is Talk Unleashed. I love history. I always have. I don't know if it's because I grew up outside of Philadelphia and so was surrounded by colonial history. I mean, I remember going to Valley Forge as a kid, and we took a horseback riding tour, and we're on the top of the bluff where George Washington sat on horseback alongside his troops to look down across a field through the woods to see the scarlet coats of the British Army advancing. It was late fall, early winter when we went on that tour, and there was this sense of very powerful connection. There are a lot of places like that, places where the veil is thin, where the connection to the past is really present. I love places like that. Las Vegas, though people joke about the temporariness of it and how it hasn't been there that long, the truth is the city's been there since the early 1900s, and there is history that predates the white man being there by quite a long time. Amazing indigenous tribes, native cultures that were there long before the casinos became part of the history there. I've been to Peru. I've been to the Middle East. I've been all across the United States and in places in Europe. And there are just places where a sense of connection is just present. As a fan of history, I love learning about the places where I go and that I am presently in a very fascinating part of the United States, a place where I haven't spent much time, really landed for me on Friday. I'm near Appomattox. Appomattox, which for those of you who know American history, know that it was one of the bloodiest battles of the Civil War. It is also the place where the Civil War ended, at the courthouse at Appomattox. That's where the treaty was signed. And I've spoken in an earlier podcast about my experience driving through there on my way into town, this sense of finding home in a place where I had never been. On Friday, I had a couple of appointments, and so I was out and about, and I was driving through Buckingham County, where I'm staying, and was on my way toward Appomattox, and there was a big roadside sign, Appomattox, the place where our nation came back together. Yeah, let that land for a second. You know, I think it's funny, the War of Northern Aggression, as it is known to some still in the South, and the Civil War, as I was taught it was called, having grown up north of the Mason-Dixon line. I think of Appomattox and I think of the war as this divisive thing. And indeed it was. It was a time when the United States had never been more divided in its, at that time, very young history. It was literally a nation fighting unto itself, a nation divided. But I had never really thought about it from the perspective of Appomattox being the place where the nation actually came back together. It felt like a particularly apt sentiment, given the work that I do, given the stand that I am, and given the kinds of conversations I tend to have with people. It felt really interesting to see that sign. It reminded me of a trip I took to Atlanta. This is many decades ago now. I was in Atlanta, well, just outside Atlanta, for some sort of tech event. And I was there with a friend of mine who at the time was a writer for the New York Times. And he and I decided that we were going to go out to dinner and we were going to leave the hotel and go to some local restaurant. So we did. And I just got this very strange sense during the course of the meal as I was sitting there. The waiter kept giving us, you know, fairly odd looks, people in the restaurant looking at us oddly. And I turned to my friend, I said, "Is it just me or does something feel weird?" And he looked at me, he said, "Kathy, you're a white woman sitting having dinner with a black man." And I looked at him and I laughed. I said, "We're right outside Atlanta. This is ridiculous." And he looked at me and he said, "Some things haven't really changed." And I thought about that conversation as I was driving through the rest of the afternoon on Friday, as I was going from place to place and meeting different people and chatting with them and remembering that sign, Appomattox, the place where our nation came back together. Friday night, I actually went to synagogue. That's right. I found a synagogue. It was my father's yard site this weekend, the annual remembrance of the day that he passed. It was 23 years ago. So I went online and I typed in synagogue near me. The closest one was in Lynchburg, almost an hour away. And they had a service on Friday night at 7:30. So I got in the car, made my way, and pulled up in front of the synagogue. I'm getting out of my car as a couple is getting out of the car next to me, and they look over and say, "Oh, hello, you must be new or visiting." They just obviously not a large town, and I wasn't someone they recognized. I introduced myself, said I had just moved into the area, and Susan could not have been more delighted. And we walked in, and she proceeded to introduce me to everybody. And I mean everybody. The security guard, the president of the congregation, every single person inside. I got an introduction. It was delightful. Felt very warm, very welcoming. Now, this particular synagogue doesn't actually have a rabbi at the moment. Their rabbi passed away almost exactly a year ago. And I happened to be there at the Friday night service where they had invited several of his colleagues from neighboring religious institutions to come and say a few words. There aren't any synagogues nearby. They weren't rabbis. One was a Lutheran pastor, one was a Baptist pastor, and the third was a pastor at a Unitarian church who's a Choctaw Indian from Oklahoma. And I listened as each of these members of the clergy described this rabbi and described how he was a stand for unity, how everyone was welcome in this congregation. It didn't matter what they believed, just that they felt welcome. That he was often a lone voice in a community that sometimes didn't agree with him, but always respected him. The pastor, who was from Oklahoma originally and who is Choctaw Indian, spoke of a conversation that he had had with this rabbi a couple years prior, where the rabbi asked him about traditional dress, traditional Choctaw Indian dress. And they got into a conversation about what it meant to wear the clothing of their people in public in a place where that might be uncomfortable. And this pastor said the rabbi was asking, "Why aren't you wearing any of your Choctaw clothing?" And so the pastor looked at him and said, "I could ask you the same thing." And at that, the rabbi pulled out his yarmulke and put it on his head. And the pastor pulled out a medallion, a traditional Choctaw medallion, and put it around his neck. And the rabbi looked at him and said, "I see you." It was very powerful. It was a very powerful conversation. And I got a chance to speak with the Lutheran pastor after the service. We talked for about 20 minutes about the transformation of our society, about leadership, about the trip that he had taken to Israel, and his realization of the connection of all faiths, and that we all pray in a different way, but are all praying for the same thing, even if the entity to whom we are praying may appear to be different, though some of the concepts and beliefs might be different. Appomattox, the place where our nation came back together. What might it look like if the place that is known for the war that almost destroyed our nation? What if I'm in this place because it's from here that the unity gets to come? Wouldn't that be a kick in the pants? There's something very powerful about this part of the country. I see it every time I go for a drive. And it's not just the historic landmarks and the historic markers and the notations of what happened here in 17-something, 18-something. The Lutheran pastor spoke about places where the veil is thin, being in places where the sense of connection of what was to what is, that sense of connection is very, very present. And that it's almost like history is speaking to us, warning us, celebrating us, chastising us, probably laughing at us too. But this idea that maybe it's in these places where we get to take the biggest steps forward. Because it's not like we're starting from nothing. It's not like we don't know what can really go wrong if we allow differences to get in the way. Virginia itself is a seat of that, the civil rights movement. Brown versus the Board of Education, Loving versus Virginia. It's really amazing to me that we seem so blind to what's been when the signs are all around us. We know what happens when we act the fool. We know what happens when people get othered. I've mentioned on another episode of the podcast that I'm reading Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor. He was imprisoned at Auschwitz. The book isn't about the atrocities of the war, though. It's about the search for meaning. It's about finding meaning and purpose in the middle of the most unthinkable horror that can exist. And the second part of the book is about what he did as a psychiatrist and physician to leverage what he had learned to show that in crisis and catastrophe, people aren't made to behave a certain way or another. Their true essence is what comes out, and their true essence is based on their history. This idea of the search for meaning, though, it's at the heart of everything. When my friend and I were at that dinner in Atlanta all those years ago, I remember him saying something to me, you know, about that time. I said something about the Civil War, and he looked at me and said, "Oh, you mean the War of Northern Aggression?" And I paused. I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you know, that's how people in the South were taught the name of that conflict in some places, not everywhere, but in some places." And he said, "Kathy, make no mistake, there are some people who believe that war isn't over." This was decades ago, but I can't help but feel that those senses still exist, and it explains so many things. Divisiveness, discord. Appomattox, the place where our nation came together. Something to that. Here we are, the end of another episode.
So sad.
But it's not really. Because there is an entire library of Talk Unleashed podcast episodes you can enjoy, and a whole bunch more yet to come. Make sure you don't miss any. Subscribe, follow, heck, set up a carrier pigeon network if you like. Whatever it takes, just make sure you don't miss any of these conversations. And since conversations do require dialogue, meaning back and forth, I want to hear from you. Who would you like to hear from? What topics would you like to hear addressed? Drop a line to talkunleashed@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Catch you next week.